The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Want the real story behind the sound bites and headlines? Let's find the facts. Remember, it's not a conspiracy theory if it's the truth. You are not paranoid or confused. You just need to know.
Welcome, everybody. It is time for another edition of Everything You Need to Know. Kip Kiefer with you on a gorgeous Monday in the Southeast United States. Glad to be here on TKR and coming to you with more good news as things start shaping up in the right direction for our country, for our future, but more importantly, for our children's future and their children, and on and on and on. This country is taking corrective action. We talked about last week the dynamic of some optimism I shared with you probably early this year, maybe January or February, that whenever these kind of movements that want to transform everything, tear down everything, this whole new America involved tearing down the old America. And as American citizens on November 5th this year, the voices were pretty unanimous in their dispute of that strategy, basically voting hell no. And that is where we are now, because the voices of the people, 5 million more than voted the other way, and prayers for them and their lack of understanding of what was at stake here. I told you repeatedly, we started this show back in, I think, April or May of 2023. We've come to you every week since. And the central theme through all of that has been, this is not Republican versus Democrat. This is not conservative against liberal. This is not red against blue. Those are the simplified ways of looking at things. This is not, I have always voted Democrat, and I need to continue the family heritage. This is a completely different era, because what we just experienced is something that happens periodically in any kind of elected government, any kind of representative government. You have people that want to grab control, because control and power means untold wealth. It all comes down. All the mysteries of life can almost always be solved by one simple premise. Follow the money. That is all you've got to do. And in this situation, that's basically what power and control equates to: untold wealth for the people and the industries, the corporations, the different nefarious players that line up on the other team here against the American people. And I'm so proud of my American brothers and sisters for finally recognizing that we've all been played for this period from 2008 to today, when the first election of Barack Obama, remember, the stars are going to explode, the seas are going to rise, the new transformation of America has begun. Well, guess what? On November 5th, 2024, that transformation came to an end. The state-run media, who has been the biggest cheerleaders, they might as well put on some skirts and carry pom-poms into the studio. These people that have been telling you all of these things that are so erroneous and so false to get you to drink the Kool-Aid of this transformation is underway and there's nothing that's going to stop it. America is an evil, racist country. It's the root of all the problems in the world. America's meddling and involvement in all these hotspots is the cause of all this strife, all of this situation where all these third world countries are failing, because America has been at fault of not directing the world properly and intervening where they don't belong. Of course, anybody with a functioning brain that hears that knows that America has been the greatest force for good, the most generous by far, I mean, by far, nation in the world. It's not even remotely close of transforming itself from that standpoint and involving themselves in a lot of corners of the world we don't even need to be. But the whole program, Obama, the tour in 2008 administration of flying around the world, apologizing to world leaders, bowing before kings and prime ministers, basically just groveling because the agenda for that group, the transformation, included a lot of bad actors from the foreign shores, because these people believe that America does not need to be the strongest, most independent, most successful, most significant nation in the world. We need to be a good global citizen. We need to allow all of our resources to be shared with the world. The American people, you, me, everybody you know, we've had it too good. We're spoiled rotten. We're used to success. We're used to wealth and prosperity. We're used to security and optimism. So they have methodically, you can't build something without tearing down what was there first. And that was the movement that you voted against on November 5th. You voted that the tear down is over, the transformation of America. The seas, go ahead and calm down. Stars don't explode, because we're back to good operation. And I want to talk about that a little bit today, because you're still going to hear the sensational cries from the defeated. They're trying to salvage what's left. They don't comprehend that you have a functioning brain. How could you do this to them? They've been telling you, all of their media figures that come out of Ivy League schools, they're smarter than you. They know better for you than you know for yourselves and your family. They're all trying to put together what happened. They thought they had you totally bamboozled. The election of Joe Biden, which was under ridiculously suspicious circumstances, because of a well-timed world pandemic that they exploited to the ultimate to get an election in place in 2020 with emergency procedures. And the emergency procedures was basically to cut any corner, pull any shenanigan, just to make sure the outcome was assured, because they absolutely positively, and I say they, we're not talking about Democrats here, we're talking about our geopolitical foes, the Iranians, the Chinese, the Russians, a lot of the bad actors in the Middle East. These people were desperate to get Donald Trump out of office, because he was really taking charge of the world stage. There weren't wars breaking out. There weren't conflicts all over the globe. So from that standpoint, they could not perpetrate their agendas with another 4 years of Donald Trump. But the real people pushing the panic button were all of these bureaucrats in Washington, D.C. And I've told you since day one, drain the swamp was a lot more than a campaign slogan. And Donald Trump went to Washington, and he knows that he erred now. He went to Washington promising to drain the swamp, but really had no plan, no conception of what that was going to take, because he really didn't know what he was getting into. And let me offer this as evidence to that point. In almost exactly 8 years ago, on December 4th, 2016, my phone rang at 6:52. I've still got the message, so I've got the actual information, at 6:52 in the morning. And my first thought was, who dares call me at 6:50 in the morning? I look, and it's a Las Vegas number. My son lives there, so but it wasn't his name, so I knew it was somebody in Vegas. I answer the phone, and Kip, it's Phil Ruffin. Phil Ruffin is one of the richest men in America. Phil Ruffin was my boss for a number of years. We've had contact over the years on various projects. Phil owns three hotels on the Las Vegas Strip. He has property all over the United States, is involved in all kinds of businesses, and it was really one of the greatest experiences of my career to be under the employ of a guy this significant, who basically is the embodiment of the American dream. He came from a lower middle class background in Wichita, Kansas, started with nothing. His first job was actually in a department store in the pet section. You can't make this stuff up. As a really young man, he soon gravitated, because he had just a fantastic work ethic and a head for business. He became associated with a guy who had the really one of the first string of, it's within the Midwest, he had a string of convenience stores, which was a brand new invention, that came up with the innovative idea to put gas pumps out front. In those days, always the gas pumps were in service stations. There was no such thing as self-serve, and those original ones in Kansas and Missouri also were manned by somebody to come out and pump your gas. But the bottom line is, Phil becoming involved in that business, he went on to revolutionize it by proposing an outlandish idea of being open 24/7, which everybody thought was insane. Who's going to be going to the store and buying gas at 3 o'clock in the morning? Well, I think the idea kind of took shape, and I don't know if he's the only one, but he was one of the originators of that idea. And when the gentleman that had that string of stores, and they had quite a few, they were both in the fuel and the minor grocery business, where you could just pick up items, drinks and supplies and bread and, you know, the standard convenience store fare, although modern day convenience stores are awesome. Of course, in Alabama, we're basically living in a third world country. Of the top 10 convenience store chains, Alabama doesn't have any of them, which is ridiculous. Now, there's a few Quick Trips starting to show up. Racetrack gives us Raceways, their secondary brand. Maybe we're catching up a little bit, but that's a sidebar that I don't really need to get into. It's a whole different subject. But anyway, Phil Ruffin, a self-made guy, started buying property. Every nickel he made, he put it right back into business. He ended up operating that company when the gentleman who had founded it, the convenience stores, retired. And he came up with a really innovative idea when one of the giant oil companies wanted to buy them out. He sold out, but he maintained the property that the stores were on. He did not sell lock, stock, and barrel. He only sold the operations to a major oil company and maintained that property, which has been the secret of his fortune and why he's amassed such an amazing bit of wealth. And eventually he got into the gaming and casino business. That's how I became associated with his company. Had a great time, and he's based in Vegas now. He's in his late 80s, but he still shows up for work every morning about 4 o'clock. Runs his worldwide operation from there, including his TI, Treasure Island property right on the Las Vegas Strip. But on that morning at 6:50 in the morning, I got a call from Las Vegas, and it was Phil Ruffin on the other end. So that's 4:50 in the morning, his time. He's already at his desk. He said to me, I'm looking at doing some expansion. I really would like you next time you're out here to stop in. I want to sit down and kind of pick your brain and see how you can help me get this operation, which was the blending of racetracks and casinos into one entity. And it was a real honor. And this was only, of course, on December 4th, almost a month to the day, where Donald Trump had shocked the world and won the presidency. And I had to ask, because I was very mindful. I had met Trump at the old Frontier Hotel that Phil originally owned in Las Vegas. And, you know, Trump was there to talk about a lot of that property that came with the Frontier when Phil acquired it back in the late 90s. And they were meeting, and I had brought some paperwork that he had asked me to get for that meeting and brought it to the office and met Trump at that time. So I knew they were associated. I knew they were good friends. I did not know the depth of that friendship until learning later on that when Phil married a former supermodel from Europe, who was much his junior and fathered another child in his 70s. This is a remarkable guy, but it just so happens that Melania Trump, who would go on to become the First Lady of the United States, was introduced to Donald Trump by Phil and his new wife. I think they were actually even Ukrainian, which is kind of a amazing coincidence. They were from one of the former kind of Russian satellite states. Anyway, they're very close. When Donald Trump married his current wife, it was at Mar-a-Lago, and Donald Trump was best man. So these guys are very close, have been business associates and friends for a long time. And I said something to Phil that morning. This is, again, December 4th, 2016, 1 month after the election. I said to Trump, I said to Phil, well, your boy's on his way to Washington. And he said, yeah, you know, it's funny you mentioned that. I just talked to him yesterday. He's begging me to come to New York and sit in Trump Towers for the next 2 weeks vetting people for his cabinet. And I told him, Donald, I'd love to help you out, but I've got a business to run here. I can't get away. You're going to have to depend on somebody else to do that. I tell you that story because think about that. He was elected on November 7th, I believe, that year. And on December 4th, he was asking Phil to come to Trump Tower and help him vet people for cabinet positions. Now it's today, as I come to you on this broadcast, it is November, I'm not sure the date, but we're in mid-November, like November 17th or 18th. And so at that time in 2016, when Trump was shockingly elected, he was just getting organized to start planning his administration. This is now, let's flash forward 8 years here to the modern day. Trump was elected on November 5th, and within 3 or 4 days, already started announcing cabinet positions, already had a transition team on board that was vetting candidates. This has been run from Mar-a-Lago down in Palm Beach. This is a full-scale operation. And basically, now about 3 weeks prior to where he was in 2016, he's basically put all of the major pieces in place of the cabinet that he wants to deploy. So you can see the difference. And Trump concedes. And one of the things Terry Quillian and I, my radio partner, were very critical of the original Trump administration was many of the appointments he made turned out to be real stinkers. The appointment of former Alabama Senator Jeff Sessions to be the attorney general and oversee the Department of Justice, which he said was his dream job. Since Sessions jumped in right away and supported Trump when everybody else thought he was a joke, I guess Trump felt like he owed Jeff Sessions this dream appointment, not really considering the ridiculous exposure that provided, because Sessions at his core was a Washington swamp creature. He'd been up there forever. He came into office his first couple days at the DOJ. He did something that was absolutely incomprehensible, that really was the first domino that caused the trouble and the headaches that Trump endured through his first administration. Because if you remember, Jeff Sessions assumed that office and immediately, they ramped up all of these allegations about the Russia situation. Trump is a Russian operative. We've got information. We've got a secret dossier prepared by the former MI6, which is the British Secret Service. You know, James Bond was an MI6 guy, but this guy was no James Bond. This guy was trying to make a buck. I think he got paid by the Hillary Clinton campaign, who was a trunk slammer by that time. They lost the election, but all of a sudden this dossier circulates. James Comey tells Trump about it at a meeting at the Trump Tower to get him affirmed that he was going to stay on as FBI director. But the whole allegation was that there was Russians involved intricately in the Trump election, that they had interfered. You remember all of that nonsense. Trump knew that he was being recorded and wired. He used the word wiretap, with people scoffed at. He's thinking he's being exposed to technology from 25 years ago. But the bottom line was, they were being monitored and investigated by the Obama Department of Justice, because people knew that Trump was going to be a wrecking ball, and they were already trying to destroy him before he even took the oath of office. So this time, Trump has hit the ground running. He has not waited, and he has not just haphazardly leaned on people that were Washington insiders. You can't run on a promise to drain the swamp and then depend on people that are part of the swamp to make recommendations on cabinet posts. And that's the trap he fell in last time, because he waited too long to get organized. He said, well, I got 4 years. Not really. You've got the first 100 days are the most critical of any administration. If you're given a mandate like he was by the American people, you need to take the oath of office, go to that office, and the Oval Office, I should say, and hit the ground running. You need to start changing policy, overhauling things that the American people are tired of enduring. And that job starts an hour after the pomp and circumstance of Inauguration Day. And it's really started for him now, 2 months earlier than it did the last time, maybe even more like 2 months and a couple of weeks, because most of the cabinet appointments are in. And it's a big difference from the last time. I even heard him in one of his rallies this year say, okay, I'm going to admit something to you that I don't usually vocalize. He said, my first administration, I made some mistakes, especially at the beginning. I actually appointed some real, and I love the word he used, some real clinkers. I called them stinkers, because that was the same thing. He had a lot of guys in jobs that were not part of the Trump movement. They were part of the deep state swamp, and it was a catastrophic mistake. All of them he eventually fired or forced to resign, and almost every one of them wrote a tell-all book saying that Trump was the worst guy in the world, and he was a dictator, and he was a terrible person to have as the president. So this time he's learned his lesson. He is appointing a staff of people that he knows were going to step in and do what the American people have sent them there to do. And that's basically get control of this country and put us back on track as a constitutional republic, as we were intended to be, and not a Marxist, gigantic, bloated, overrun, overspending, just print money when you want to, not adhere to constitutional law, just pick and choose the things that serve your agenda. The American people had enough. There was a movie called Enough back a few years ago. That's what the verdict is by the American people. Enough. Go to Washington and do the work that needs to be done for the people of this country. And the coalition that jumped on board of that are people from all religions, all races, all different backgrounds, all up and down the economic scale, people that recognize that this election was critical. As I told you a couple weeks ago, when I said it will not be close. The American people have gotten the memo. Change is needed. And it was not change from anything having to do with Donald Trump. It was change from the resumption of the Obama administration, who had their third term behind the scenes with all of their people in the cabinet, in all the administrative jobs. Obama did an amazing job in his two terms of putting people in place in Washington that were going to execute the agenda. They were rubber stampers. They were foot soldiers. These are people like Mayorkas, Alejandro Mayorkas, in charge of the biggest agencies in the country, the Department of Homeland Security, which has 22 different agencies under his purview. And what were his qualifications for that job? Well, he was a trained lawyer. He had an Ivy League degree. He started off working for far, far left-wing organizations that were promoting all kinds of things, particularly environmental criminal was his background. And when the Biden administration came, their appointments was amazingly filled with people from, of course, the Obama administration. Mayorkas eventually settled in the Department of Justice, where he was basically a professional lawsuit guy. Anybody who dared challenge any of these government agencies, Mayorkas and his team were generally the guys that were filing the suits. And because he had been such a good foot soldier, they put him in charge of the biggest group of departments and some of the most critical departments in our homeland security situation, including the Secret Service and, of course, the Border Patrol and all of the other agencies, FEMA. It's just an amazing array of critical things for the American people. And this guy, who was basically a Washington machine bureaucrat and a lawyer who just sued organizations and people for a living, with no background in management, no expertise whatsoever in executing the specific duties of these departments, and that is what we have seen in this country in these three terms of Barack Obama. Let's not even pretend that Biden had any say so or any input into anything during his administration. And of course, they end up forcing him out because their polling revealed he couldn't possibly win. Well, there's a huge catfight going on in the Democrat Party now of who's at fault for the disastrous plan they did come up with that badly backfired in their face. So these cabinet appointments are critical to the success of the Trump administration this time, and they are going to hit the ground running. You heard all the voices already chirping last week that some of Trump's appointments are outrageous. Hakeem Jeffries from New York, a congressman who is the minority leader in the House of Representatives. That means he's the top dog amongst the Democrat minority in the House. Of course, the election, the Republicans held the House and took the Senate and the White House. So now it's all stacked against the movement, the machine, and they are panicking. Hakeem Jeffries say, are you looking at these cabinet appointments? Is this the best we can do? You know, who is he criticizing here? Pete Hegseth, who was a Fox News host the last 7 or 8 years after a brilliant military career. He's multi-degreed from Princeton and Harvard. This is not some knucklehead that went to journalism school in St. Joe's, Missouri. Pete Hegseth earned 2 bronze stars, was on battlefields in Afghanistan, served at Guantanamo Bay, also in Iraq. Pete Hegseth lives, eats, breathes, comes from a military family, is beloved by people that are regular soldiers and people that are dedicated to our country's military being the strongest, most, proactive force for good in the world. And Pete Hegseth is being criticized for being a Fox News host. If you were in his position and retired from the military and had all this expertise and had the charisma and the looks and the ability to kind of tell the right stories, that was a great direction for Pete Hegseth to go to advance his career and his visibility. And it's paid off because now a real soldier, a real guy who's concerned about not only the serving people, but the veterans and all the people that have been the critical parts of our military, and also adheres to the mission of the military, which of course is simply to provide a force for good in the world, to have the ultimate opportunity in the case that's ever needed, but it's really peace through strength. The American military has become bogged down again by direction. This is not an accident. This is not just a few of the wrong people getting involved. All you've heard about in the last couple of terms of Barack Obama and Joe Biden is this kind of woke movement in the military where it is not based on merit, your promotions and major appointments. We have to have DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion. And, you know, I don't think that's ever a good policy in any endeavor to promote people, not based on what they can do and what they've achieved and how competent they are, which is called, in a simple word, meritocracy. But instead, the emphasis is promoting people based on their race, their religion, their sexual preferences, blah, 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 their gender preferences. This whole movement of DEI in the military is catastrophic. And let me ask you a question. If you were on a situation where you're in a critical situation, don't you want to look to your right or to your left? And the people standing shoulder to shoulder with you are people that have proven that they are the best in the world at what they do, the people that are there because of their skills, because of their bravery, because of their unbelievable commitment to serving this country? Or do you want somebody that's been placed in that spot because of their gender or their race or their religion or their gender preference? You know, it's pretty simple to say that of all the entities you can name, you want people that have earned those spots to be alongside you. And you don't have to talk about fighting in foxholes anymore because the military now is far more sophisticated, but you want the very best of the best in all of these weapon developments, all of these systems to provide security for the country, all of these different areas where we are exposed to information leaks and hacks. You need the very best of the best in the U.S. military, and really from the top down in all of these different departments. Of course, there's criticism for Tulsi Gabbard, let's talk about the criticism for her. She's a military veteran. She was in the House of Representatives. She was a Democrat. She ran for president as a Democrat. She has seen the light that this is not the direction the country needs to go. She is very capable, very impressive. She threw her support behind Trump, which made her the most just despicable person in the world. How can somebody from our ranks throw in with Donald Trump? The horror. Same thing with Robert F. Kennedy. He's a Kennedy. The Kennedys are completely identified with the Democrat Party. But Robert F. Kennedy will eloquently say, this is a party that used to be pro-peace, pro-working people, opportunities for all Americans, and they've completely gone the other way. They are the party of war. They are the party of huge government. And Robert F. Kennedy also is absolutely disgusted by the plutocracy movement of all these major corporations and all this money padding the pockets of our elected representatives and influencing policies that benefit them and make millions of dollars. So Kennedy and Gabbard, for coming to the other side, oh my God, they've got to be destroyed. These are terrible people to head up the Department of National Intelligence, and in Kennedy's case, Health and Human Services, because Robert Kennedy has been an outspoken advocate of the fact that this country is in a terrible health crisis. Right now, we don't really have health care. We have sick care, and there's a big difference. Health care is trying to prevent disease, is trying to ensure that our water and our food supply and our medicines are all going through the process of being carefully considered and taking away things like when there are amazing breakthrough items. Let's say for diabetes, there are drugs I know that have been developed that never see the light of day because pharmaceutical companies with so much money buy out those products from whoever has manufactured them, and they basically shelve them because it's bad for business if you don't have a multi-billion dollar enterprise of selling insulin, which they did in this administration, finally put the pressure on them because you know, they can't let them just get away with murder. So they insisted that they drop the price of insulin and considered that a big victory. But insulin may not even be necessary, because I contend there are drugs already developed that can basically take away this scourge of diabetes that infects so many people. And that's just one example. Anything you can mention, heart disease, this whole trans movement. Let me tell you how insidious that is. They are mutilating children in these big healthcare operations, because they're convincing them without even consulting parents sometimes. Don't you really identify more as a girl if you're a boy, and vice versa? So they actually mutilate these children who are making decisions and being coerced into declaring themselves something they're not born to be initially. Now, later when you're an adult, if you make that call, knock yourself out. But you don't let a 7 or 8 year old say, no, I'm really a girl, and then have them on a surgical table and do the terrible things that are being done that are going to ruin and affect them the rest of their life. But here's what it really does from a business and pharmaceutical standpoint and a medical gigantic healthcare conglomerates. These people are signing the dotted line. They're going to be lifetime patients, because they're going to have complications from this for years to come. They're always going to have to be on the most expensive of medications. They become lifelong patients. It's sick care. It's not health care. Preventative medicine is what Robert F. Kennedy's preaching. He wants to get in and make sure the food supply, because you've got the same abuses there. They look the other way as the checks are flying and the regulations are ignored, or people that aren't playing ball are slammed with regulation that inhibits their business. If you play ball, you're fine. So the Food and Drug Administration, which is under the auspices of the House, the Health and Human Services Director, Robert F. Kennedy is going to be great, because he's coming in not as a political operative. He's been a private citizen. He's been very involved in environmental issues, which also, of course, intersect with all this. But Robert F. Kennedy, anybody who thinks that this is some kind of political appointment, he's a Kennedy, for God's sake. And even the Kennedys, who are rooted in the traditions and the nonsense of this party transforming and really selling its soul to all these big money elite interests. And don't fool yourself. The working man has recognized that the Democrat Party does not stand for them at all anymore. They've abandoned the unions. They've abandoned the working class, the middle class. This is the party of elitism, of globalists, of interests that are not consistent with what the American people demand. And I talked about Mayorkas. I told you last week, you know, they criticized Kamala Harris and Mayorkas for failing in their duty to secure the border. They didn't fail. They were doing exactly what they were directed to do. Their marching orders were open the borders, let these people pour in, because we are going to transform this country by importing a bunch of new people to be the residents of this country. And now, with an estimated, I don't even remember what the number is, it's like some ridiculously high number of people that have proven to be convicted major crime individuals from all these countries that have just walked into this country. We've had a lot of terrible violent crimes, the Lake and Riley trial going on right now in Georgia. These people are the first targets in the Trump administration. He immediately tabbed Tom Homan, who's an all business expert in rounding up these people and getting them the hell out of this country. We don't need 140,000 convicted criminals in the United States robbing stores, assaulting our citizens, and murdering, raping, and torturing young girls, children, human trafficking. The Trende de Agua group from Venezuela it was a prison organization. And now they're all in this country. They're setting up different strongholds in all major American cities. These people need to be rounded up and shipped out of here. We don't need to import some of the worst criminal element in the world. And that's what this wide open border has done, because they want chaos in this country. You can't destroy it from the outside. You've got to destroy it from within. So the Trump appointments are brilliant. These are people that are going to go roll up their sleeves and affect change. And Hakeem Jeffries and others have said, you know, American people voted for change. They didn't vote to destroy the government. Attention, Hakeem. That's what exactly they voted for. They know that this is out of control. They know government is bloated. And I need to enter into the conversation now. Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy, they are, I laugh every time I say it, are in charge of the new DOGE, D-O-G-E, which is the Department of Government Efficiency. DOGE, of course, also is the cryptocurrency, one of them that's been developed by Elon Musk. So it's kind of an inside funny joke, but the Doge, named in the same vein as the coin. These are two of the most successful businessmen, two billionaires that are not coming in for their, you know, the Democrats are already attacking Elon Musk. What is his motivation here? Is it for him? Is it for the country? He's worth $300 billion. I don't think he's really trying to promote his own wealth here. I think what he's doing is recognizing that this country was off the rails, and they are going to put their shoulder to the wheel in a huge way. And it's being highly misunderstood by so many analysts and people. They're not just looking for government waste and bad spending. That's been going on for years. You've seen these reports that congressmen put out, different people, that all of these agencies, these departments, these bureaus, these tens of thousands of government employees, most of whom still hasn't come back to work from the COVID days. The Social Security Administration only has 7% of their operatives working full-time in the offices. So you've got giant office buildings completely empty. These departments, these people are collecting a check for doing absolutely nothing. And now this committee, with Ramaswamy and Elon Musk, and they're calling for volunteers from other walks of life, accountants, business experts, they are going to independently look at every aspect of government. And they're not just looking for fraudulent spending. They're looking for fraud. They're looking for corruption. They're looking for complete inefficiency. And so many departments in our government are going to check those boxes, and they are going to be recommended to not be reformed, but in many cases to be eliminated. This is freaking the Democrats and the Washington swamp monsters, particularly all of these people that know they have been stealing you and me and our country blind for having jobs where they don't do anything by design, except for keep the gravy train rolling. These people are freaking out that Donald Trump is going to come in and with his all-star team to direct what needs to be fixed, he is going to affect that change and get rid of so much of the fat and fraud and waste. And they're saying he's going to destroy the government. No, he's going to make the government go back to what it was intended to be. It was intended to be the central organization to ensure the safety and security of Americans. And they have completely violated that mission by trying to create this administrative state in the model of Marxist countries around the world and be a great globalist partner and share American resources and money. And American people said enough. So it's not to reform the government. It is to tear down this government that needs to be torn down and reconfigured in an efficient and cost-effective way. You even hear conservatives misunderstand what this means. It is not just to look for fraudulent expenditure. It's to look for completely unnecessary bureaucracy. And it's like the biggest diet of all time. Cut off the source of all the fat, and let's see what this government comes out looking like. It will be more efficient, more cost-effective, and it will increase the wealth and vitality for all Americans. And that is what's going on there. Godspeed, Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy. This is exactly what this country needs. Businesses go through audits. The government needs to be audited, and even more, The government needs an enema. This needs to be a complete clean out and reimagination of what the federal government needs to be, because what it's grown into and what this bloated, ridiculous, inefficient, uncalculably costly. I mean, what other business can just when things need to be done and they need to reward people that are on board, they just print more money. Well, every time they print more money, guess what that does to the money you have in your pocket? It lessens its value. That's why everything you pay for now is 30, 40% higher, because the money you're paying for it with has been dramatically reduced. This has to happen. Thank God it's going to happen. And no matter how much they whine and moan, they can't stop it. And they know it. And they're absolutely freaking out. And the people that voted for Kamala Harris, a lot of them that just do it because they're told to, and they vote Democrat, and they don't trust Trump. They don't like Trump. He offends them, whatever. But these people that are, you know, filling up psychiatrist's office, posting these videos, just acting like they're right on the edge of the cliff and being pushed off. I mean, get over it, everybody. This is not a political party. This is not a movement. What they've created is a bunch of mindless zombie cult people. And this is what people in cults do. They disown their families. They disown their country. They only identify with the charismatic leaders that are telling them how to think and how to feel. And, you know, God bless them and God help them, because we don't need a cult in this country as the rival political party. And that's what they have managed to be able to create. So block out the noise. Get behind the movement. This is the movement that's going to return America to exactly where it was intended to be and where it needs to be going forward. And the big winners are your children and your children's children and all the generations to come, because we're going to be back on the rails and better than ever over this next period. I'm Kip Kiefer. That's what you needed to know today. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.